This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, and this great nation began on July 4th, 1776, the first Independence Day. And we are celebrating Independence Day this year, today, even with the 4th coming up tomorrow. But we have a very special show honoring some of the founding fathers who made the American miracle possible. George Washington, the subject of our first hour. How was he both indispensable and indestructible? And then the second hour, we'll be talking a little bit about the painstaking process in which Jefferson and Adams and Franklin and others at the Continental Congress had to struggle for the decision to declare independence. And then finally, the third hour, there's a sensation going on right now because Disney has released the Hamilton movie version of the epic stage show in which most of our important founding fathers make appearances. So we were going to be talking a little bit about the historical basis for that musical. I'm going to be speaking with rock star Greg Tomlin about the real Hamilton. And maybe a little bit about what the musical got fundamentally right about him. All coming up on a very special Medved show for Independence Day. And without further ado, prepare to meet, yes, the father of our country, though he's not the father of any flesh and blood children, much to his chagrin, the man who was first in war, first in peace, and first in the hearts of his countrymen.
Washington's birthday, celebrated on February 22nd, even though Washington was actually born on February 11th. But because the calendar shifted while he was alive, while he was a young man, he always observed his birthday on the 22nd of February. What we're listening to in the background is a march written for George Washington in 1793, the beginning of his second term. It's a march written by a German immigrant named Philip Pfeil. And you know, for 100 years, this was our unofficial national anthem? Until Woodrow Wilson, another Virginian, substituted the Star Spangled Banner officially in 1914. In any event, this, the President's March by Philip Pfeil, written to greet Washington at his second inaugural. Washington, one of the most remarkable lives in all human history. You may think you know something about him. You may think you know Washington as sort of a cold, statue-like, marble, pure figure. He wasn't like that. Do you know that one of his neighbors referred to him as the Stallion of the Potomac? Now, that may make you think he has more in common with Bill Clinton than is actually true, but Washington, as a young man, was tremendously passionate, was always in love with one beautiful woman or another, proposed to two women who turned him down. Turned him down because he didn't come from such a great family background. Washington's family background is something that's often misunderstood. People think George Washington, he had it made. He was born as an aristocrat. He was born into a rich family, prominent family. Well, it was a highly questionable family in Virginia society. His ancestor, the first Washington to come to America, came in 1675. His name was John Washington. He was a, he was a fairly controversial guy. He was implicated in the murder of five Indians who had come under flag of truce. He was a rather fierce gentleman, was John Washington, the president's ancestor. And also, after the wife who was George's ancestress died, he married in succession two sisters who had both been accused before him when he sat as a justice of the peace, one with keeping a bawdy house, and the other with being the, there's no polite way of saying it, the mistress of the governor. By the time that Washington's father came on the scene, Augustine Washington, the family had gotten a bit more respectable, a bit more accepted, but it was not a leading Virginia family in any way. And Washington himself had the tremendous misfortune of having been born to the second wife of Augustine Washington. Why was that such a big misfortune? Well, because it meant that whatever money his father left when his father died when George was 11 went to his two older half-brothers. George, who was the oldest of the five kids from the second family, was always treated as something of a poor relation. And then there was the problem of his mother. His mother, Mary Ball Washington, maybe would go down in history with Sophie Portnoy, the fictional mother of in Portnoy's Complaint by Philip Roth, as one of the truly, truly impossible mothers in the history of this country. She was 25 by the time she married Washington's father. And the reason that she was an old maid, and 25 was an old maid at that time, before she got married for the first time, is because this lady was impossible. Just how impossible was she? How difficult did she make the life of her son and everyone around her? It's part of the story of the formation of the most remarkable character, the most remarkable self-control and dignity in all of American history. We're covering, for a little while here, President George Washington. His father, Augustine, died when he was 11, which meant that poor George was left to his mother, Mary Ball Washington. She had five children. George was the oldest. He got most of her attention. You can get almost some sense of just how impossible this woman was when you visit her home in Fredericksburg, Virginia, a home that George built for her. He never could do enough for his mom. Does that sound like any other mothers you might know? It's incredible to read her letters. It is the most heartbreaking thing. George Washington is away. He's general-in-chief of the Continental Army. He's fighting the British in an impossible struggle. And his mother nags him, you haven't called on me recently. You haven't written me. What are you doing? She didn't want him to be general-in-chief. She thought he was doing the wrong thing because fighting the British and creating a new nation was taking attention away from her. When George was 16, he wanted to run away to sea. He wanted to become a ship captain in the British Navy. He was in an impossible situation with his mother, with four younger siblings, and his half-brother, who became sort of a surrogate father, his half-brother Lawrence, who was 14 years older than George, encouraged him, thought he would make a great naval man in the British Navy. He had packed up his belongings. He had his trunks ready to go. The carriage was ready to take him to the coast where he was going to sail away, ultimately to London, to join the British Navy. His mother came into his bedroom and basically threw a fit and said she would die if he left the home. He couldn't do this to her. He had to be there. He couldn't leave. He never joined the British Navy. How different would world history have been if Mary Ball Washington had been somewhat different? The relationship with her oldest son was always stormy. Before he went away in the Revolution to take command of the colonial armies, the Continental armies, he had set her up in that home in Fredericksburg, and he saw to it that she was well supplied with money and goods, but she nonetheless complained, as he put it in one of his letters, upon all occasions and in all companies, that she was neglected and left in great want. She even went to the Virginia legislature and initiated a movement in the legislature whereby the state would come to her financial rescue while her son was off as commander-in-chief. Washington found her action the greatest humiliation of his entire life and squashed it. After the war, her demands for money became so oppressive and annoying that Washington wrote back to her and suggested, why don't you sell your house and go live with one of your children? But he didn't want her to come to Mount Vernon and live with him. She had such a testy relationship with her son. She was alive and well when he was inaugurated as the first president of the United States. She refused to come because she didn't approve of him being president. anybody think you have problems with your mom? The father of our country set the tone on that one.
To purchase this show, go to MedVedHistoryStore.com.
The coronavirus pandemic has thrown our nation into somewhat of a chaotic situation, and we now find ourselves in completely uncharted territory. As usual, the media presents a confusing, often exaggerated portrayal of events. So where can you go for reliable information? The American Council on Science and Health, ACSH. ACSH is a 501c3 nonprofit whose mission is to separate fact from fiction and health scares from legitimate health threats. Their expert scientists and medical doctors have been communicating science to the public since 1978. At ACH.org, you'll get answers to all your coronavirus questions. How does it spread? Should I wear a mask? Will there be a treatment? How can I keep my family safe? ACSH also debunks common myths, such as vitamin C being a cure. ACSH provides indispensable analysis in this era of disinformation. You can sign up for a free daily newsletter and contribute to this vital organization. Go to acsh.org today.
This is Michael Medved, and I know you're worried, like everybody else, about the coronavirus and its impact on our future. Now, all the false, fake information spreading around the internet really does bother me, especially about the economy and how it impacts your financial future. I've always trusted Nick Rovich, who's the owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion, to advise me on the right moves. Nick?
With the government adding nearly $5 trillion in liquidity, the uptrend in metals is likely to accelerate. The problem is, the supply of physical gold, silver, and platinum is severely limited and likely to get a lot worse as various mints and refiners are closed. With my 40 years worth of connections, I can help your listeners acquire gold, silver, or platinum, even though many dealers are sold out.
Call Nick Rovich at 800-221-7694. That's 800-221-7694. Or go to AmericanFederal.com. 800-221-7694 and AmericanFederal.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Hey, self-reliance gardeners, now that you've got your crisis garden planted, the next step is to make sure all your vegetables are going to grow like crazy the rest of the summer. For that, you'll need an all-natural, full-spectrum plant food that works to not only maximize nutritional uptake for you and your family, but is also guaranteed to make your fruits and vegetables actually taste better. The name of the product is ProtoGrow, a proprietary blend of bioactive superfoods for plants designed to produce rapid plant growth in record time, so much so that it almost forces plants to grow even under the worst light and soil conditions. It does this by combining powerful trace elements and micronutrients from seaweed extracts with a balanced blend of macronutrients from cold water fish. The result? Vegetables grow faster than ever because they now have the essential bioavailable nutrients they need. Go to growlikecrazy.com to learn more. Huge summer discounts now available. growlikecrazy.com.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
You're listening to The Michael Medved Show. The father of our country. You know what's fascinating is when he was 15, he wrote down in his own handwriting 110 rules of civility and decent behavior in company and conversation. And these are rules that, frankly, I would like my son to copy over at some point. What's interesting is the origins go back to 1680, and they used to be known as Hawkins' Rules of Civility. The original Hawkins' rules had 170. This is 110. These are the rules that George Washington copied in his own handwriting at age 15. Associate yourself with persons of good character. It is better to be alone than in bad company. Think before you speak. Accept corrections thankfully. Be not obstinate in supporting your own opinion. Treat sublime matters seriously. Do not repeat news if you know not the truth thereof. Speak not evil of the absent. When you speak of God or his attributes, let it be seriously and with reverence. Honor and obey your natural parents even though they be poor. Let your recreations be manful, not sinful. Labor to keep alive in your breast that little spark of celestial fire called conscience. When your superiors are talking, do not speak or laugh. When your elders are talking, speak not until you are asked a question, then stand up and answer in a few words. And this goes on to things like, kill no vermin as flies, lice, ticks, etc., in the sight of others. You know, in the 1750s, that was a big thing to be careful of. Well, I'll tell you a good source, if you want a source on these. It's a book which was actually sent to me by a listener, and I thank the listener for that. It's called The Making of George Washington. The author is William H. Wilbur. It's published by Freedom Foundation at Valley Forge. They have almost all of the rules of civility and the origins. What can you say about this? What you can say is that this kind of moral education helped to take a raw-boned, huge young man, and he was a giant in his era, and a very passionate young man, and to make of him one of the greatest human beings who ever walked around on this planet. When I come back, I want to talk just a little bit about the physicality of George Washington. There's some argument how tall he was. When he died, his private secretary measured him 6 feet 3.5 inches, which would be about the equivalent of 7 feet today. A very, very tall man and a remarkable physical specimen in every way. We'll be back with that and the impact Washington had on people around him, just as a physical presence, when we return on the Michael Medved Show. Part of what you need to know about George Washington is this whole vision of the stuffy, powdered wig aristocrat. No president has ever been more shaped by the frontier. No, not even Jackson, not even Lincoln, than George Washington. His entire maturity came from adventures on the frontier. He also had less formal education than any American president. Only one of the first six presidents never to go to college. He actually went to schools less than a year. He was tutored, but remember that both Jackson, Andrew Jackson, and Abraham Lincoln studied law as adults. Washington never did. He did seem to have an aptitude for mathematics. If you look at these copybooks, which his mother, his doting and impossible mother, Mary Ball Washington, preserved, you can see that he was very advanced with math. And part of what happened with him as he was growing up was when his mother made it impossible for him to run away to sea, which he wanted to do, he became interested in surveying in the wilderness, in using some of this mathematical skill to map out untracked land. And he writes about these early adventures, encountering Indians for the first time and being fascinated by them, about a love of the wilderness, of a love of adventure. And in fact, he was starting to work as a surveyor at age 16, right after it became clear that he wasn't going to be allowed to run away to sea. And he was so taken with this wide-open western land that at age 18, he made his very first land purchase. Now remember, he did not have inherited wealth because he was from his father's second family. But at age 18, saving up money that he earned as a surveyor, he made his first land purchase on Bullskin Creek. It's a tributary of the Shenandoah in the Shenandoah Valley. Was then wilderness. He bought 1,459 acres, and this was a lifelong obsession for him. He continued acquiring acreage, at one point owned close to 60,000 acres, most of it in the wilderness, because he believed in the future of the wilderness. He was a rugged guy. How big was Washington? Well, there are different points of view. Someone who knew him well in his 20s described him as 6 feet 2 inches tall, in his stockings, and weighing 175 pounds. We do know that he never weighed more than 200 pounds, though there's debate about his height. His height could have been as high as 6 feet 4.5 inches. This is interesting. This is one of the most famous men in the world. How do we not know exactly how tall he is? Well, after George Washington died, just shy of his 68th birthday, his faithful private secretary, whose name was Tobias Lear, measured all his measurements, all his dimensions, for posterity. This was the most famous man in the world at the time. He measured George Washington very precisely at 6 feet 3.5 inches. Now, this was when he was 67 years old. Some medical experts say that this indicates that Washington, in his prime, would have been even taller than that, making him our tallest president, even taller than Lincoln. Others suggest that perhaps rigor mortis had set in when Lear made his measurements, adding an inch or two to Washington's height. In any event, he was a giant, and people who met him were immediately impressed not only by his size, but particularly by his bearing, which was remarkable. He had huge hands and feet. He always had to have gloves made specially. Normal gloves wouldn't fit on George Washington. He wore size 13 boots. He had cool, steady, blue-gray eyes. In Emerson's phrase, Ralph Waldo Emerson, he said his eyes recalled an ox gazing out of a pasture. But a lot of other people saw far more accurately a controlled sort of fury in his eyes. What is fascinating, particularly to me, I'm going to read a description of George Washington. This was done when he was fighting in the French and Indian War, and he was a young officer, and he was basically a nobody. He's 26 years old. And yet, one of his fellow officers wrote this down about him. This was how important he thought George Washington was, that he wrote down this detail. Straight as an Indian, measuring 6 feet 2 inches in his stockings and weighing 175 pounds. His frame is padded with well-developed muscles, indicating great strength. His bones and joints are large, as are his hands and feet. He is wide-shouldered, but has not a deep or round chest. Is neat-waisted, but is broad across the hips and has rather long legs and arms. His head is well-shaped, though not large, but is gracefully poised on a superb neck. A large and straight, rather than a prominent nose, blue-gray eyes penetrating, which are widely separated and overhung by a heavy brow. His face is long rather than broad, with high, round cheekbones, and terminates in a good, firm chin. He has a clear, though rather colorless, pale skin, which burns with the sun. A pleasant and benevolent, though a commanding countenance, dark brown hair, which he wears in a queue. His mouth is large and generally firmly closed, but which from time to time discloses some defective teeth. His features are regular and placid, with all the muscles of his face under perfect control, though flexible and expressive of deep feeling when moved by emotions. In conversation, he looks you full in the face, is deliberate, deferential, and engaging. His demeanor is at all times composed and dignified. His movements and gestures are graceful, his walk majestic, and he is a splendid horseman. The guy was 26 years old. What was it about him that so impressed one of his fellow officers that he'd write down all this detail about a 26-year-old who, frankly, wasn't even that important yet?
You're listening to the Michael Medved.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. John Hess, 5 out of 5 stars. Awesome. Probably my only review, but at age 40, I was getting bad heart throb and left arm pain, mainly before bed. I even stopped smoking and drinking sodas for a month, and that didn't work. After one day of taking Extendivite, it was gone and hasn't returned in 3 years. I've ordered Extendivite 13 times, so Amazon just said. Juliet Hordick. I've ordered this product before in liquid form. It is fantastic. My whole family's been on it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
A Henry Ford Health System study shows anti-malaria drug hydroxychloroquine helps lower the death rate of COVID-19 patients. The study analyzed just over 2,500 patients hospitalized among the 6 hospitals in Detroit between March 10th and May 2nd and found that 13% of those treated with hydroxychloroquine died, while 26 of those who did not receive the drug died. The study also points out that one of the keys to the drug working was being treated with it within the first 2 days of being admitted to the hospital. Today is day three in the new United States-Mexico-Canada trade deal, and Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue tells Fox News the deal is working out great for America.
This is good for the whole economy. This will bring jobs back to the United States.
This is USA Radio News.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
We're talking a little bit about the way that George Washington just absolutely overwhelmed people when they met him. They were instantly struck by him. They were instantly impressed by him. This was from the time he was a teenager. What impressed them was not only his physical stature and his agility. He was a fine horseman. He was a great, fun-loving, athletic, enthusiastic kid. But was also his self-control and his self-possession. And there was also a sense, beginning when he was 21, that he had been marked out for some kind of a special destiny. You see, after his brother Lawrence, half-brother Lawrence, died, Washington took over his role with the militia in Virginia, and this led to his entrance onto the world stage and to his crucial role in the early days of the French and Indian War. And he was one of the militia officers who went with General Braddock back in July of 1755 in what was still recorded as the worst defeat for British arms in history, Braddock's defeat, the Battle of Monongahela near Pittsburgh, where the British marched into a trap set by the French and their Indian allies. Why is this noteworthy? Well, Washington at the time was all of 23 years old. He was a young man. He was a colonel in the Virginia militia. He was the only officer of all the British officers who was neither killed nor wounded. And he alone was responsible for getting out about a third of the British troops, helping them to survive and to escape. His commander, General Edward Braddock, was killed. The amazing thing is his uniform had four bullet holes in it. Washington was unscathed. His horse was shot out from under him. He fell. He was feverish at the time. He was suffering from some kind of a flu or a fever. He fell after his horse was shot, got on another horse. The second horse was shot. Washington continued in the battle. When he returned, he wrote to his brother Jack. Washington wrote, "Death was leveling my companions on every side of me, but by the all-powerful dispensations of Providence, I have been protected." Now, there was a famous clergyman in Virginia named Samuel Davies. He wrote at the time, again, Washington's 23 years old, to the public, I point out that heroic youth, whom I cannot but hope Providence has preserved in so signal a manner for some important service to his country. Amazing stuff. 15 years later, before the Revolution, before Lexington and Concord, before he was a famous general, when he was just a planter at Mount Vernon, he went with his lifelong friend, Dr. Craik. He was the same doctor who attended Washington in his final illness in 1799. He went riding back to the scene of this battle. Just to look at it, again, we're talking about 1770, so Washington was, well, he's born in 1732. He's in his late 30s. He was riding with his friend, Dr. Craik, back near where the battle had occurred that he had survived so miraculously. They came upon a band of Indians who came to them with an interpreter. And the leader of the band was an old, venerable chief who specifically wanted to speak to Washington. He didn't want to speak to Dr. Craik. He pointed to George Washington. He said, I want to speak to you. They kindled a council fire and sat around the council fire. And the words the chief spoke to the then 38-year-old George Washington are worth repeating. I'll give you those words when we come back from this break on the Michael Medved Show. We are in the dense wilderness on the Michael Medved Show, near current-day Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yeah, once was dense wilderness. Still some pretty good woods out there, by the way. But George Washington, in 1770, 5 years before he's appointed commander-in-chief of the Continental Army for the Revolution, is riding with his friend, and an Indian chief at sunset asks to speak to him. And they sit around a council fire, and Dr. Craik, Washington's friend, wrote down the words that the chief spoke through an interpreter. This is what he said. I am a chief and ruler over my tribes. My influence extends to the waters of the Great Lakes and to the far blue mountains. I have traveled a long and weary path that I might see the young warrior of the great battle. It was on the day when the white man's blood mixed with the streams of our forest that I first beheld this chief. Remarkably, this Native American sachem had made a point of finding Washington, who he had seen on the battlefield 15 years before. The Indian went on. I called to my young men and said, Mark yon tall and daring warrior. He is not of the Redcoat tribe. He hath an Indian's wisdom, and his warriors fight as we do. Himself alone is exposed. Quick, let your aim be certain, and he dies. Our rifles were leveled, rifles which, but for him, knew not how to miss. 'Twas all in vain. A power mightier far than we shielded him from harm. He cannot die in battle. I am old, and soon shall be gathered to the great council fire of my fathers in the land of shades. But ere I go, there is something that bids me speak in the voice of prophecy. Listen, the Great Spirit protects that man and guides his destinies. He will become the chief of nations, and a people yet unborn will hail him as the founder of a mighty empire. And so we do hail him. One of the things that is peculiar about George Washington is it's kind of difficult when you look at the portraits of Washington that Gilbert Stuart did, the famous one on the dollar bill. He doesn't look that impressive. And yet everybody who met him was hugely impressed by him. You know what that's about? Gilbert Stuart, the painter, who was a drunk, came to Philadelphia in 1795 and wanted to paint the president to make a buck. He never got along. The painter was in the habit of keeping his sitters amused and their faces alive by a flood of showing outrageous talk. Washington, who always felt uneasy at remaining still and being stared at, was put out rather than amused. And Stuart, who believed that artists were fundamentally superior to all other human beings, including presidents, resented Washington's formality. He could not forget what resulted when, in trying to unstiffen the hero, he had gone to the length of saying, "Now, sir, you must let me forget that you are General Washington and I am Stuart the painter." And Washington replied, as it seemed to him politely, Mr. Stuart need never feel the need for forgetting who he is and who General Washington is. So Stewart emphasized, as no other portraitist did, the distortions of Washington's mouth with his false teeth, which were made of hippopotamus ivory. And none of the other artists who painted Washington had Stewart's vast skill in creating a convincing likeness, but Stewart distorted his mouth. And in fact, people talked about Washington's false teeth, created hollow cheeks, strong cheekbones. Stewart stuffed cotton into his mouth. And you can see that. Look at the portrait on the dollar bill. Stewart, with his rage against Washington, he always disliked the man, had the ultimate revenge on what he considered to be poor treatment by portraying Washington to posterity with that very uncomfortable and unhappy look in his face. When we come back, I want to talk about Washington's friendship, which raised some eyebrows, with a married woman while he was president, who claims that she discovered love letters on a desk she bought from Washington, and why George Washington, who never had children, was still the most appropriate possible person to be father of our country. This and much, much more when we return.
There's Washington held in a bumper around, for he is our glory and pride. Along shall it matter with conquest be found, there's virtue and peace on our side. Along shall it matter with conquest be found, there's virtue and peace on our side.
What you're listening to right now is one of countless songs and tributes written in the 1790s and to President Washington. This is one of the first art songs, so-called art songs, written in the United States by Francis Hopkinson. It's called A Toast to George Washington. He is our glory and guide. Say the words. Francis Hopkinson was a rather remarkable man. He was a signer of the Declaration of Independence himself and America's first Secretary of the Navy, also America's first notable composer.
You're listening to The Michael Medved Show. Consider becoming a Medhead now at michaelmedved.com. Go to michaelmedved.com, click the Medhead banner, and subscribe. We got some special deals going on right now. The cost of becoming a Medhead subscriber? About the price of a latte per month. And when you're a member, you get access to all kinds of premium features. Most of all, thanks for listening.
Have you had the chance to visit our partners at the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College, faithandfreedom.com, or click at the banner at michaelmedved.com? They're a top think tank in the nation for the application of faith and freedom. That's why I visit Grove City College every year to be part of their annual conference, speaking on more than a dozen different topics to a total of thousands of participants. I'm proud to broadcast this show from their campus every year when I'm there because it's such a wonderful event. Unfortunately, this year's conference was postponed due to the pandemic, but I encourage you to visit their website. All of their past conferences are available. You can catch my talks along with many other great presentations. Dr. Paul Kenger, Jonah Goldberg, Rick Santorum, Ross Douthat, Ralph Peters, Robbie George, and many, many more. Go to faithandfreedom.com to see wonderful presentations from the sharpest minds in America. Faithandfreedom.com, or click at the banner at michaelmedved.com.
Okay, I will admit it. I love good movies, especially now when you're holed up at home. Don't some of you with families want to introduce your kids to some of the movies that meant the most to you? Wouldn't it be great to have a service that actually allows you to block out maybe some language you don't want to hear or some intensely graphic sex or violent scenes? Well, that service is called ClearPlay. When you purchase or rent movies from Amazon.com, ClearPlay settings enable you to watch the movie without violence, profanity, or other content that you choose. Customization is all based on viewers' personal settings. Go to ClearPlay.com to learn more. Try, for instance, that great baseball movie and father and son movie, Field of Dreams, with just some of the unnecessary harsh language. Go to ClearPlay.com to learn more. ClearPlay loves good movies.
Today, many of us are paying attention to our health, and what we eat plays an important role. But so often, the water we drink is a mere afterthought when it should be a primary part of our daily nutrition. Real Water would like to change how you think about the water you drink and how it can play an important role in helping your body restore balance and reach its full potential. The key benefits of every bottle of Real Water are stabilized negative ions, balanced pH, detoxification, and it hydrates you like never before. And yes, it tastes great. Real Water is beyond alkalinity, and due to its proprietary process called E2 technology, it's the only drinking water on the market that can maintain a stable negative ionization, which means real science in every bottle. Order your Real Water today and take advantage of special pricing for this audience only by calling 1-855-REALWTR or visiting buyrealwaternow.com. That's 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com. Order now. 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe Hand Sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American-made with American ingredients, employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus. That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout. Right now, click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1 liter bottle of high-quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus, a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours, free, 2020safe.net.
You're listening to a special rebroadcast of the Michael Medved Show.
Michael Medved back with you, and a couple of more points on George Washington. You can't possibly, in the time allotted to us, attempt to do a full biography of this remarkable man. What about the very big question? George Washington and slavery. Such a remarkable man. How could he have been a slaveholder? When he died, he owned 300 human beings. Does that not raise questions about his actual moral stature? George Washington, perhaps the greatest of all Americans, has had his name removed from a school in New Orleans because he was a slaveholder, and he was. Washington's attitude toward slavery, very different from Jefferson's, and his record, very, very different, and actually extraordinarily inspiring. How can you say that a slaveholder had an inspiring record? Because he was willing to lose a great deal of money, to make very major sacrifices, to act upon his belief that slavery was an absolute wrong. We need to talk a little bit about what happened after his death, because after his death, his slaves were freed. Why did he wait till his death? Why not? You have 300 people who work for you, who you own. Why not free them at the time? It's complicated. Washington's opposition to slavery was very clear, and he never, Jefferson, later in his life, justified slavery with all kinds of racist theories about Africans being innately inferior. Washington never wrote or spoke a word like that. All we know is what he said, for instance, to an English visitor. This is before he became president. He said, "I clearly foresee that nothing but the rooting out of slavery can perpetuate the existence of our Union by consolidating it in a common bond of principle." And to Edmund Randolph, his first Attorney General and later Secretary of State, he said that if the Union should separate between North and South on the issue of slavery, "I have made up my mind to move and be of the Northern." Washington recognized that slavery was a positive evil. But one of the reasons he didn't free his slaves while he was alive is because, unlike most slave owners, where slavery made marriage illegal, he encouraged his slaves to marry. In fact, virtually all the slaves who we have records of living at Mount Vernon were married, and their marriages were written down, and they were honored. But what this meant was that he couldn't sell any of the slaves off or free them because they were married, in many cases, with Martha's slaves. Now, you say, what about Martha slaves? Yeah, Martha maintained her own property through life. She brought a great deal of property to the marriage. There were a couple of things that you have to understand. First of all, when Washington was a boy, slavery was not only universally accepted, not only was it legal everywhere in North America, it was legal all around the world. And it wasn't just slavery of black people. Slavery, not invented for blacks, stretches back to the beginnings of human history. It was just considered a natural part of life. When Washington was a young man, the anti-slavery movement began in earnest in England and spread to America, and he was caught up with it. He clearly found slavery to be repugnant, and yet he had this difficulty, which is it was impossible in his part of Virginia to get non-slaves to work the farms. There weren't such people. Basically, slave labor had done what Lincoln always feared it would do if it were extended to the territories. It had chased out the idea of white people, or free blacks for that matter, and there were many free blacks, from working as farmhands and taking wages. It was one of those things where he simply didn't understand or conceive of a way that he could operate Mount Vernon without the slaves. Here's what he wrote while he was president to his friend David Humphreys. The unfortunate condition of the persons whose labors I in part employed has been the only unavoidable subject of regret. To make the adults among them as easy and comfortable as their actual state of ignorance and improvidence would admit, and to lay a foundation to prepare the rising generation for a destiny different from that in which they were born, affords some satisfaction to my mind, and could not, I hoped, be displeasing to the justice of the Creator. One of the things that he did was he made a rule that, unlike other Virginians and other southern slave owners, no slave would ever be sold off from Mount Vernon. The only chance where slaves would be removed from Mount Vernon would be at their request. But that almost never happened, because Washington was known to be a kindly master. Now, this may sound like a small thing. It was a very big deal. Jefferson, for instance, kept financially afloat, to some extent, by breeding slaves and selling off young teenagers, separating families. Washington never did that. And that was why, of the 300 slaves that were part of his estate when he died, 300 slaves total, some of them owned by Martha, technically her property. She died 2.5 years after George. Some of them owned by George. Most of them were either elderly or small children. They were people Washington was supporting. They cost a good deal of money. Eventually, he kept tormenting over this and trying to figure out how to deal with it. He came up with an idea which he thought would get him out of this difficulty. Part of the problem for anyone is so much of a big part of your property, of what you owned, were these people. A slave was equal in price to 3,000 pounds of tobacco, which, of course, is a lot of earning. A slave was equal in price to a several-acre lot. You could buy several acres of land for what it would cost to buy a slave. So how do you keep yourself afloat and still get rid of this institution that you loathe? What Washington did was he had an idea that after he left the presidency, he would turn over his land to tenant farmers, divide it up to white tenant farmers, and then have the white tenant farmers employ the slaves, pay them as free workers, and then once they were working as free workers and had a life, Washington could free them. The only problem was that the white tenant farmers that he wanted to bring there, he couldn't rent his property to for enough money to keep himself afloat. He was very worried, particularly toward the end of his life. He had neglected his estate. He had neglected his financial affairs because he was running a war as general-in-chief of the Continental Army. And then, of course, he was running a country as our president for 2 terms. The difficulties he had, eventually he decided that there was nothing to do other than to stop temporizing. What he wrote to Tobias Lear, his secretary, and this is a document that was marked private because he was terrified that some of his neighbors in Virginia would see it and would be outraged because he was doing something they were not doing. He said, "I am animated by a motive more powerful than all the rest, and that is to liberate a certain species of property which I possess very repugnantly to my feelings, but which imperious necessity compels. And until I can substitute some other expedient by which expenses, not in my power to avoid, however well disposed I may be to do it, can be defrayed. His intention was again to bring these renters in, but when he didn't do that, he decided that he would move forward anyway. Having failed to establish a way to assure the adult slaves some employment congenial to their situation and experience, he saw no choice but to free them out of hand. So in his will, he required his heirs to make sure that all who were old or infirm would be comfortably clothed and fed while they live, and he did his best to protect his former slaves from the bad guys who roamed the South, kidnapping free blacks for sale further south or to the West Indies. He specified that none, under any pretext whatsoever, could ever be transported out of Virginia. But all of this failed to ensure that the black workers thrown unprepared into freedom would not be worse off than before. He specified in his will that children whose parents could not or would not take care of them were to be supported until they were old enough to be legally bound as if they were white apprentices. They were to serve until the age of 25, be taught to read and write, and brought up to some useful occupation agreeable to the laws of the Commonwealth of Virginia, providing for the support of orphan and other poor children. They were thus not to be discriminated against, but gathered into the white world as if they were not black. After he died, Abigail Adams visited Martha down on Mount Vernon and saw her struggling with trying to make her husband's will actual. And they did it. They freed all of the slaves. Many of them absolutely refused to leave Mount Vernon. By the way, what's interesting is while Washington was very much alive, while he was president, he quietly freed a number of his slaves by bringing them with him to Philadelphia, which was the capital. There was a rule that if you stayed in Philadelphia, which had a Quaker influence at the time, for more than 6 months as a slave, then you were freed. Washington deliberately freed some of his slaves that way, including his favorite slave, who was a slave called Hercules, who always dressed in a dress uniform and was Washington's favorite cook. For the first several years of his presidency, he used to transport Hercules back down to Virginia for a couple of days every 6 months so that Hercules wouldn't be freed. But then he recognized that was unacceptable. And eventually, in the middle of Washington's presidency, the president's cook was freed and went away and went his own way. We don't know it to history what became of him. Was Washington stained by the tremendous moral evil of slavery? Of course he was. Anyone who had any contact with slavery or slave owning was.
If you want to catch the rest of this broadcast about George Washington, go to MedVedHistoryStore.com where the full program is available.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you could donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-785-9618. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It will be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car, and as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now, 1-800-785-9618. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-785-9618. That's 1-800-785-9618.
I'm here with Scott Youseum, founder of OMG Tax. Tell us how your company helps our listeners out there who have a problem with the IRS.
My team of lawyers, enrolled agents, and licensed tax experts remove wage garnishments sometimes in the same day. We even have reduced the total debt some of our clients were required to pay through what is known as an offer in compromise.
Can you give us an example of somebody you help?
Oh, can I ever? We have taken a $500,000 liability with the IRS. Guess what? The client didn't pay a dime through the representation known as non-collectible status with the government.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000 and you want to see if it's possible to pay a lot less, call OMG Tax right now for a free tax-saving consultation.
Call 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. That's 800-486-8112.